Perak Bet, Pasuk Yud. Moshe has two mothers. Okay. He has a biological mother who gave birth to him, who raises him. It says, Vayigdal Hayeled. The boy grew up. And now a feminine word with a feminine pronoun, but not identified, right? So if it says, and Moshe grew up, and she brought him to Bas Paro, who would she be? Well, whenever such a thing happens and you don't know who the subject of a pronoun like this is, the thing to do is see the very last pronoun. Who's the last pronoun? Look at the pasuk before. Batikacha isha hayeled batinikehu. The woman took the child and she nursed him. Vayigdal hayeled. The child grew up, so it's obvious. Batviehu lebas paro. She brought him to Bas Paro. Vayhi lo lebein. And he was to her a son. Right? It's ironic, the word Maseis, Moses, we usually say in English, means son in ancient Egyptian. It's good, it's hot in here. Okay, so by he lo lebein, so she was for him a son. So now, so who's the subject of this next word, batikra? So she called him Moshe. Alright, would probably be the law. Alright, but I just want to say, Rabbi Yehuda Chassid says batikra goes on Yocheved. But Tikra goes on Yocheved. Yocheved called him Moshe. Kimina Mayim Mishisihu. But Mishisihu means I drew you from water.
That would be
okay. Bas Paro. That would be Bas Paro. And we're just left with the wonderment that Bas Paro started speaking Hebrew out of nowhere. Right? To draw from water does not mean anything that sounds like Moshe in Egyptian. Right? Okay, Ibn Ezra points this out. Das Kanan points this out. She may have named him. I mean, she named him on the spot. Mm-hmm. Maybe she, you know, she named him together with Yocheved. Okay. Anyway, let's get that now to the main point that we want to do today. Turn the page to page 298 if you're looking at a Chumash. I think you all are. Mm-hmm. And we're reading Bayahi Bayamim Haim. Okay. In those days, interesting way to start. Bayahi Bayamim Haim, implying that it's. Is Vayigdal Hayeled, so we wanted to know how old does that make him? Right? Make him 2? Does it make him 13? Does it make him 20? No matter. It says it again. Vayigdal Moshe, Vayitzei Elechav. He grew even further. Vayitzei Elechav, he went out to his brethren. But the pasuk doesn't tell us how he knew that these are his brethren. Right?
Does it say Vayigdal twice?
It says Vayigdal twice, yes. One can be just that he was no longer nursing, or that he, I mean, mm-hmm. We say a Gadol is at 13. So now he's getting even a little older, old enough to challenge someone, right? So last week I gave you an assignment. I gave you an assignment to look up what we call the Milat Mancha, the extra word in our story. There's a word that appears too often in our story.
Ish.
Practically every pasuk has the word ish. And it's one thing to just have that word again, 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 again. But each time it appears, it didn't need to appear at all. Right? Yeah. Each time, really. You could do without Vayar Mitzri Makev Ivri Me'echad. V'ifin Kovacho Vayar Ki Ein Ro'eh is what I would expect to find. He saw no one looking. What do you mean he saw ki ein ish? It's very poetic. Moshe looked this way and that way, and he saw no man. So he smote him. Well, what does that mean, he saw no man? Right? Remember we said last week that when Paro's daughter, I'm sorry, when Moshe's mother was preparing the teva for him, that it's strikingly connected to the story of Noach. Mm-hmm. So the, it's the Chumash's way of telling us that Moshe's mother, in preparing this basket for him, is saving the world. There's a flood that, if not for Moshe, would have overcome the entire world and would have caused as much damage to the world as what happened in Parshas Noach. If not for the fact that here a woman is saving him so that he can save others. Okay? All right, so Moshe goes out unto his brethren. He somehow found out that these are his brethren. Right? Vayetze el achav means he knows that they're his brothers. It's not just that as an Egyptian prince, he's going out and he's saying, this isn't fair. No, he feels a camaraderie with them. Right? He feels, why am I not among them? Right? There is a medrash that he actually went among them. How do we see that from the next two words? Make a diuk, like Rashi says. It's not just vayar es sivlosam. That would mean he saw their travails. He looked at them, and you can see suffering. You can be a moral person and see suffering, even though they're not. It's not your, you know, your people or so. You can adarava. You can feel suffering of anybody. So it says vayar bisivlosam. The Hebrew, you won't capture this so much in the English, I'm afraid. Right? Observed their burdens. No. I wouldn't expect the English to capture this really.
So shared.
He shared their burdens. Vayar bi, he went into their burdens. He experienced their burdens. Right? Tisk, tisk, look at that homeless man in the street. You know, so there are some people who say so they live like a homeless person for a week just to feel what it's like, or they subsist on $1.60 a day for a week in order to see what that's like. You know, anyway, the Medrash says that he went into the pits to mix the mud for the bricks. And the movie has him doing that, by the way. If you ever see it in the movie, The Ten Commandments, it says he went in there with them. Right? So, okay. So then, while he was in there, okay, very nice, you're experiencing them, but you know, on a daily basis, these Hebrews are getting hit, they're getting beaten. Vayar ish mitzri, make ish ivri me'echov. Now, notice, he's raised as an Egyptian, but the ivri is echov. For his whole life, how old is he now? There are two opinions that appear in the Medrash. One that he's 20, one that he's 40. Let's go with 20. All right. He's in his life. He has always experienced the Egyptian way of seeing things. Right.
Mm-hmm. No contact with the parents.
No, he had contact. It was
depends how old he was when he was brought back. That's Machlokas Rashi and Ramban, whether he was 2 or whether he was 13. But I don't know if Paro's daughter would. You know, she's raising him. Does she let him go back for a vacation once in a while, for summer? You know?
Or at least tell him his background.
We'll never know.
Never know.
We can't know from the text. Moshe, you have a question?
So, Moshe is living in a house. He's in the palace. So how can he identify so readily with...
Well, that's what makes him special. That's why God is going to choose him.
So that's why he's working. Each so many times.
We'll get into that. We'll still figure that out. But twice in the pasuk it says me echov, vayetze el echov, and ishivri me echov. Right? Bereshis has had a brother problem, you know. Mm-hmm. Right? And now Moshe is relating to echov. Vayifen kovacho, he looked this way and that way. Vayarki ein ish, and he saw no man. So. So he smote the Egyptian, and this implies that he looked this way and that way. What's the pshat? What is he looking for?
To see if someone's watching.
See if there's an Egyptian watching where it might not be safe to do this.
No witnesses.
Right? So when he saw there were no witnesses, now apparently there were witnesses because the next day he's about to find out that there were, but no, he might have been other Hebrews looking. That wasn't on his mind. He didn't want any Egyptians looking. That can inform and get him in trouble, right? Okay, so The Netziv and the Ktav HaKabbalah, these are two 19th century commentaries that are very famous. He says that Vayarki Ein Ish, there's something very specialized here. Vayarki Ein Ish, you have to read it closely. It's not Vayarki Ein Ro'eh, there's no one looking. Right? That's how you would say if Moshe was looking. Is the coast clear? Yeah, okay, no one's looking, let's go.
Somebody to stand up.
Right. They view this in a very homiletic state, as a homiletic statement. I mean by that is they saw no mensch. They saw no ish, literally, you know what I'm saying? So I can show you many places in Tanakh where the word ish is used this way. For instance, when David managed to make his way to past Avner, who was guarding Shaul HaMelech, to cut off a piece of the king's garment, Shmuel Aleph, he calls over the mountainous ridge to Avner and he says, Avner, halo ish ata. How did you let someone to get near your king? I could have killed him. Right? And he's not just saying, listen, Avner, you're the man. You are the man. He's just saying, ish ata. You are the ish. Okay? Ah, look, it's a famous mission in Pirkei Avos. You know what I mean, right?
Makom.
Right. So it could be that's the mission of Pirkei Avos. But I really think that this is the kicker. I mean, you don't have Tanakhs here, so I'm just going to paraphrase. Chapter 58 of Sefer Yeshayahu. It's the Haftorah of Yom Kippur. And Yeshayahu comes down really hard on the people about their what appears to be scrupulous attention to some of the details of the ritualistic mitzvahs, especially Yom Kippur, while not being attuned to some of the more moralistic mitzvahs. And he says that God himself, almost like the psukim by Sodom, where it says God himself comes down to earth to see if this is really happening like this. Is Yeshayahu really telling it like it is? And Hashem himself comes down to earth and he sees truth is forgotten. Justice has disappeared. And he sees suffering on earth. And here's the kicker. It says four words after all that. Vayar ki ein ish. Vayishtomeim. He says God saw that the same four words as here. He sees no man and he was astonished at how bad things have gotten. Right, so it seems that Yeshayahu also, as if though he's taking these exact four words, right? Mm-hmm. Now, it could be a coincidence. Four words in the Torah can make their way into Yeshayahu, and other places they do. But I think Yeshayahu is aware of these four words. Right? I don't mind taking that leap and saying that the way Yeshayahu explains what's going on there is the way we should understand what's going on here. There were lots of people all around. What's interesting is that the Ksava Kabbalah and the Ksava Kabbalah is at Mecklenburg. He wrote a very, very traditionalist kind of perush that tries to show that the drushos of Chazal is the pshat of the pasuk, right? And the Netziv is a little more innovative, I think. But be it as it may, they just part about what ish they're looking for. The Netziv says Moshe didn't find a single Hebrew who thought it worthwhile to gang up on this Egyptian. They're all busy, you know,
downtrodden.
So downtrodden. They don't even know. I mean, Nebuch, we've had that picture. What do you do? Which three of us are going to start charging at the one man with the machine gun and get hit first? They just had, you know what I'm saying? So maybe if they had a concerted effort where 50 of us just charge at once, maybe the 30th will reach the guy and take him out. But who can do that? They're all so downtrodden. They're not fed. They're scared. Right? Who's to blame? Right? But that's what Moshe saw. I saw no ish. Shubimakom she'ein ish. I better be that ish. Right? Look, Moshe's not frightened. Moshe doesn't have a scarred back. Moshe's not starving. Moshe's not worried about my six kids at home not having a father tonight because I stood up for someone getting beaten. So he acts, right? The Ksava Kabbalah is a little more sharp. He says what Moshe was looking for was a moral Egyptian. That's the ish you didn't find. Right? One talks about the moral, you know, the ish, who's, I don't want to say moral, but the ish who has a backbone, who's the Hebrew, to stand up. And the Ksava Kabbalah says Moshe was looking for a moral Egyptian who might say, really, should we be doing this? Does this make sense? Right? Well, it's just a Hebrew, so okay. That's the way things are. So that's the way these two read it. Okay, Vayachas HaMitzri, so he smote the Egyptian, Vayitzmenehu Bacho. Does anybody think that Moshe acted too brashly here?
No, because it says in Rashi that he saw that no Jew would come out of him, so therefore he could kill him.
My question,
okay, that's Rashi. Rashi was committed to such a perish because he doesn't want to make it seem that Moshe wouldn't have acted heroically if there was an Egyptian watching. But certainly if you go with that, but I will tell you that there is a Medrash that has a long dialogue between Moshe and God as he is pleading to get into Israel. Right, the Medrash is not a mainstream Medrash. It's actually called Medrash Petiras Moshe, the Medrash of the death of Moses. And in it, he begs for, he tells all the reasons why he thinks he ought to be able to get into Israel. And at the end, he says, God, okay, I can't out-argue you, so I just beg you for mercy. Just for mercy's sake, let me just cross over the Jordan, let me be buried there the next day. But let me just cross over with them. And God says, I can't give you mercy because you didn't give the Egyptian mercy when you saw him beating the Hebrew. Wow. Yeah. Very strange medrash.
Moshe was a pre-Egyptian priest. Why didn't he just command him to stop the beating?
Okay, but because that's because we're clouded by the movie The Ten Commandments, maybe.
No,
because Moshe never rose to that kind of power in Egypt. I doubt it. But you're maybe you're right. Maybe that could have worked.
Yes.
But Moshe, this is the first of a number of cases in Tanakh, in Torah, where Moshe acts on impulse.
Yes.
He can be impulsive. He has an anger problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth, and you know, it's the one who calls him on it every time is Rashi. Rashi, in five places in his parish to the Torah, calls out Moshe and says, Moshe, you got angry, look at the mistake you made. Each time, not just when he hits the rock. I can forgive him that time because his sister died. His sister just died, right? But the reason why Rashi says Moshe said, did I give birth to these people? Should I carry them like a baby? Mother carries a baby. Rashi says there that was much worse than hitting the rock. It's just that hitting the rock was public. That was in front of people. This was just him and God. But Moshe can, you know, when he breaks the luchos, he breaks the tablets, he hits the rock, even he hits the Egyptian. There are a few other cases as well, and we'll see this is what he did. Maybe he could have gone and, you know, and take care of this and take this guy and just listen. You know who I am? I'm Pharaoh's daughter's stepson. I'm telling you, stop this. Maybe that would have been a better thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just so taken in the rage of the moment. Vayachas HaMitzri. Now, just before I take your questions, a very interesting thing is happening here, is that this pasuk uses the same shoresh, pasuk before, Yud Aleph and Yud Bet, right? And Yud Gimel uses the same shoresh in very different forms. Right? In verse 11 it says, Ish Mitzri Makeh mm-hmm. Ish Ivri. Right? The English has striking a Hebrew man.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 12,
mm-hmm.
the same word, he struck down the Egyptian.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Right? Vayachas HaMitzri. Vayetzi Lama Takeh Reyecha. Again, the English says, why would you strike your fellow?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will admit that the word for strike in Hebrew sometimes clearly means to kill, sometimes clearly means not to kill.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you some examples. Tell me, ready? Makeh
ish v'mes.
No. Well, makeh ish v'mes mos yimas seems to imply that makeh does not mean to kill because it has to say v'mes afterwards, right? No, but I'm thinking of this pasuk. Makeh aviv v'imo mos yimas. What does it mean there?
Strike.
Must mean strike. It's very strange for the Torah to have to expend an extra pasuk to tell me that if chas v'shalom someone kills his mother or his father, he's guilty of death penalty. He's guilty of killing anybody. So makeh aviv v'imo, most you must mean
strike.
Even if you just strike them, right?
Yeah.
Is the same word used for Cain and Abel?
That's exactly the next pasuk I'm looking for.
Ah.
Wow. Very good, Shana. Okay, listen to this pasuk. It says, Vayomer, God tells Cain, Lochein kol horeg Cain. Horeg is not given to different interpretations.
Mm-hmm.
Horeg is to kill, right? And be careful, the Ten Commandments never says don't kill. It says don't murder. Lo tirtzach. It doesn't say lo tarog. Right? Kol horeg kayin shivosayim yukam. Anyone who kills kayin shall be judged sevenfold. Vayosem Hashem lekayin os livilti hakos oso kol motzo. So here it's very clear that the shorish for striking, so that none, you see, look what the English does here, so that none may kill him. Because it's clear that hakos there means to kill.
Which verse is that? This is chapter 4, verse 15
in Bereishis. So, but I can make this point in many other examples. The shoresh of to makeh, to strike, can mean to beat, it can mean to kill. We have it in three psukim, one after the other. What do they mean here? It says, Vayar ish mitzri makeh ish ivri me'echov. Is that one clear? Let's skip that for a moment.
He must have thought he was meant to kill him, otherwise why would he react so violently?
Yes, but I think that one is ambiguous.
Yeah.
When it says, Vayachas ha-mitzri v'yimitzmeh b'chol, that's obvious. It means
he killed him,
because he buries him.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Right? So there, Vayach means he killed. Next pasuk, when he talks to the two Hebrews who are fighting, it says, Vayomer l'rasha loma takeh re'echa. There, I think it's clear. They're hitting. They're striking. They're not killing each other. They're fighting, right? Okay. So I have the shorash for the word to beat three times in a row, verse 11, 12, and 13, where in one case it obviously means to kill, like mm-hmm. Bakayan. In one place it obviously means to beat, like the pasuk by parents. And in the first pasuk it is ambiguous. And I think that this is an example of purposeful ambiguity. Sometimes the Torah leaves itself ambiguous on purpose.
But also, mm-hmm. if it's in the present, he's continuing to do it. So
makeh is that he's constantly beating him and beating him and beating him. But with the two Hebrews, it's in future. Lama takereyecha. He may not have hit him yet.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, very interesting halacha. The Rambam says that if a person beats another, he may not testify in court. Because he's already wicked. Right? Mm-hmm. The Torah says in Parshas Mishpatim, a wicked person may not testify in court. So if you have beaten someone and you have not taken proper expiation and repentance, that person may not testify in court. He's not believable
mm-hmm.
if he's hitting somebody. And the Rambam goes one step further. He says, even if you raised your hand to hit someone and then someone pulled your hand back, but you meant to hit the person, you're already disqualified to serve as a witness, because it says, Lama take reyecha. Why will you hit? Yes, question.
If it was defending yourself, yes, if you're self-defending yourself.
Yes, you can argue that you're defending, Moshe is defending himself here, is defending someone else. Defending yourself or someone else, by the way. If we see someone chasing after us, we have the right to defend ourselves. If we see someone chase after another person, we have the obligation to defend that person. Even at the point of, I mean, there are different rules about this, but if someone, Chas v'Shalom, is chasing after a woman to violate her, we have the right, and according to some opinions, the obligation to kill that man before he can do that. Right? And it's based on Pesukim in the Torah. And certainly if he's trying to kill the other person, right? You can save that person C by killing person B, right? On person A. So yes, the answer to that is yes. Okay.
Were there laws yes. relating to striking among the Egyptians at this time?
There certainly are, but not for hitting a Jew. If you hit a Jew, you're trying to discipline him to get the work done, so no one's gonna think twice about that. What's interesting is that in the ancient world, for the laws of causing damages, you had to have like a bingo card, literally, because many of the societies there were five different levels of your status. So if you, it depends on your crime, but it also depends on
your status.
The crime is against. If you're, let's say, from one being the highest, if you're a five, a minor crime against a one or a two can get you killed. Mm. You following?
Mm-hmm. All right.
If you're a one, you can almost with impunity commit crimes against four or fives. Right, so in stark contrast, the Torah says, "Torah echosi yelochem velager hagor b'sochachem." There shall be one law for everyone who lives in this land. Right, so you'd wonder, why do you even have to say that? Isn't that obvious? Well, it wasn't so obvious in the ancient world. Right,
it still isn't obvious in
other. I'm sure. Shannon, do you have a question?
Yeah. I thought I had read somewhere, maybe it was with Josephus, this was a long time ago, that the rule was that if you definitely hit or attempted to kill or strike back at an Egyptian, that you the penalty was death.
Oh, sure, for sure. For a slave? Oh, yeah, that's a five against a free man. You know, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. All right, so with... When Moshe hears that this, what he did is known, mm-hmm. right? Okay, so they say to him, why, you know, he says, why would you hit your brother? We have enough trouble with the Egyptians beating us. We have to beat each other? Right? So Moshe's trying to talk some sense into these guys. How can it be that they're causing us to turn on one on the other here, right? So that they, instead of responding, you know, Moshe, you're right. We should be getting along. We should get let's kumbaya and let's make up. Mm. Instead, they say, Vayomer, mi samcha. So Moshe is now getting his first flavor of what do you have to deal with when you get into the community and you try to help people.
Right?
That's why he didn't want. Okay.
Right. Okay. Mi samcha liish. No, again, the word ish. Who made you the man? Right? Mm-hmm. This could have been mi samcha lisar v'shofet aleinu, right? Halahargeni ata omer kasher ragdis ha-mitzri? Now, there are a lot of drashas about this. I'm going to skip over all of them. The pshat of what he's saying is, you are a hypocrite. The word is out that you killed yesterday. And you're telling me, you're calling me a rasha for hitting this person? Here's a killer telling a hitter that I'm a Rasha? Right? Okay, just full disclosure. It's not Moshe calling that person a Rasha. Look at the pasuk carefully.
It's the Torah.
It's the Torah. It's the narrator calling him a Rasha. So it doesn't say Vayomer, comma, Rasha, lama tekei reyecha. No, Vayomer la Rasha. Right? He said to the wicked one. The wicked one is the one hitting. Right? Why are you... Now, by the way, in both of these cases, you ever run into two people fighting? I mean, but people are fighting for all kinds of reasons. In both of these cases, Moshe does not tap a person on the shoulder and say, what's this fight about? Can I help? You know, maybe he could tap on the Egyptian's shoulder and say, you know, excuse me, you know... Heket, whatever Egyptian kind of names were around that time. I have Tachpan Ches. What are you hitting him for? And how much more are you hitting him? Because if you're going to go overboard, I'm going to have to kill you. But if you're going to stop soon, okay, let's just call it a day. Right? That's not Moshe. Moshe just gets, you know, he sees something he thinks is wrong. What's going on here? Right? He's not going to hold a focus group about is this what should be going on and when how do we react to it? Yes.
But perhaps this one with the him, the Egyptian striking the Hebrew, that was a common occurrence. So it was happening all the time. So because of that, he went to set an example because this is what happens.
No doubt that this is an everyday occasion, but everyone got so used to, right? Which is what Yeshayahu seems to be saying about God coming down. He said, this is really what's going on in the world. It's gotten so much to this such a point.
Why did he continue to, repeat the same scenario with other Egyptians that appeared to be
Jews? Well, he didn't,
he
didn't have a chance to. But he's about to he's forced away from Egypt for this. Ishma Paro said, "Davar hazavi v'keish laharogis Moshe." Right. So very quickly, look how his life changes in a second. Vayivrach, it's all in one pasuk. Vayivrach Moshe mipnei Paro vayishav eretz Midyan vayishav al ha-be'er. So Moshe makes his way to Midyan, to the desert, right? And lucky for him, he found a source of water, right? And look at this, Moshe cannot stay out of other people's business, right? He sees seven daughters of Koin minyon sheva banos, v'tavona v'tidlena v'tamalena esaratim lashkos tzon avihen. Right? Okay. So, if Chani has another girl, we can call Joel Kohen Midyan. Our son-in-law is a Kohen, and he has six girls. All right, Anyway, so the six girls are the seven girls are the psukim have a little it's a little extra verbiage about what they're doing to get water. All right, but vayavo haroim vayigar shum, as if though this is a common occurrence because vayavo haroim, not just and some shepherds, the shepherds
the same
came
shepherds all the time,
as if though this is commonly happening to them. After all, seven women getting water for the family are easy prey for
the man. Do you think that he called him son Gershom because all this could be issue with this one? Hey, Gershom, maybe that's different the issue, but
it's interesting
because of the event, because this is costing him the man the Sipora, so that's what he was prepared. This is I call him Gershom or Gershom, maybe.
Okay, I like it, but it's, I think it's in its core it's Ger, Ki Ger,
yeah,
easy, but it's the Gershom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which seems to imply not Ger here. He started to feel very at home in Midian,
yes.
For good reason. He never really felt part of anything yet. Yeah. Moshe is the quintessential outsider all this time, and now he starts to feel at home, which of course isn't right. He has to, it's going to be a time where he has to get out of there. All right, so vayavo haroim vayigor shum. Which is maybe what you're saying here, because Gershom with a mem,
yes,
is the name of Moshe's first son. But if these are women being chased away, this is grammatically incorrect. It should be
Vegershun.
Vegershun. Women in plural get a nun. Men in plural get a mem. Okay, haim or hain.
But doesn't Vegershum go on the roim?
That Moshe is chasing.
Vayavo haro'im vayigorashum. Well, the shepherds came and chased away these
Moshe chased the shepherds.
Right, that's coming up soon. Vayakam Moshe vayoshi'on.
Okay, I see.
Moshe came and saved them. There it is plural. It is feminine.
It is for them. Yeah.
Right? And then vayashkes tsonam, back to masculine. This is a syntactical nightmare, this pasuk. Right, because feminine, masculine, feminine.
Well, maybe
ostensibly,
it says Vayigarshim because Moshe was standing next to them, so he's trying to chase them all away with Moshe, but Moshe stands up to them. Once there's one male in a group, you have to use the male.
I agree that that's a worthwhile interpretation, because however you want to interpret this, it entails a stretch. Yes. The Medrash Rabbah says that the girls had to dress up
like men
in order to avoid getting chased
Who
away.
Who says that?
It's a Medrash Rabbah, that the girls had to dress up like men in order to avoid the this common event. But the shepherds were on to them. There is a similar medrash that appears in Rus Rabbah, in the beginning of Rus, where, if you know the story probably, mm-hmm. but did you also know that, open up a Rus and you'll see that very commonly in chapter 1, these three women, by the time the husband dies and the two sons die, there are three women returning back to Israel. They're constantly referred to in the text with masculine pronouns. Mm-hmm. Even when they talk to each other, they're talking as men to men. What's going on here? Why do you do this? Have you been even like...
During the travels, he chants as men.
Travel, there's very dangerous travel at that time between Moab and Beis Lechem Yehuda, mm-hmm. which went through what's known at the time as the Gaon HaYarden. Mm-hmm. You're asking for trouble. Anyone's asking for trouble traveling that route. Three women alone traveling that route, you're not making it safely. So they dressed up as men. So this is the Bible's way of expressing this. It's not the Bible's way of telling you every fact. No. It's going to say, and so there was a dangerous trip, so they dressed up as men. No, it's going to tell you this by referring to some masculine pronouns. Okay, this works in the opposite direction amazingly, and this one really has an interesting concept to it, is that in Shmuel Bet, when two men of Binyamin assassinate the king, his name
they dress up as women.
Ishbosheth, right.
Pretending
so there, they get into the palace by killing a wheat deliverer and taking his manifest and the wheat and say, we're knocking on the door. And they say, we have the wheat. And he goes, oh yeah, right, we're expecting delivery of wheat. They come in, they get inside, and they kill the guard, and they make their way into the king's private chambers, and they kill the king. They chop off his head, and they present that. And they just said, that's all it says. They present the head to David. David kills them for this. They think they're going to curry favor with David for this, right? The names are Rechav and Ba'anar. This whole story is chapter 4 of Shmuel Bet. And very short. It's a short chapter. It's a short story. So, the question is, the Tanakh tells us how they got into the palace, but it doesn't tell us how they got out of the palace with the king's head. How did that happen? So when they leave the palace, all of a sudden they're called women. It refers to them in a feminine pronoun. Right? Okay. Robertson has described before in all its gruesome detail how they got out of the palace with the king's head. Okay. Right? Probably was not a very pleasant thing to do, but they... Right? So apparently a pregnant woman leaves the palace. Okay, I don't really see her come in, but okay, was it? Yeah. So they let her out. Or him out. With the head tucked in under his shirt. Okay, so that is so that's where these pronouns come in. Okay, so Moshe comes, chases away the shepherds. But at the end, Vayashkes Tzonam, a beautiful medrash that says that Moshe did not want this to happen again. Mm-hmm. So he made peace with the shepherds. Get it? Vayashkes Tzonam. Mm-hmm. Tzonam would be Yisro's daughters.
Yes.
That he did. But he also made peace with the Tzonam, yes. with the men.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, this story may reveal more about Moshe than any other.
Okay.
Tzonam is... Well, it means there, but the male, the men's sheep. The sheep that belong to the men. He even made peace with them. Right? Okay, so now we have three stories about Moshe. And shortly after this, God is going to appear to him at the bush. And Moshe asks... The first question Moshe asks God is, God, who am I that I should go to Egypt and take the Israelites out? And you know what? The reader may have a similar question. God, who is he? What has he done to deserve this? So the answer is these three stories. Right? And the three stories contain every possible combination of, you know, first one is Egyptian against Hebrew. Now he feels very Hebrew, so he's going to side with the Hebrew. And Hebrew against Hebrew. All right, you know, do I know which one is right, which one is wrong? But I just got to side with the guy who's getting hit, right? Mm-hmm. Then in the third one, he sees Midianite against Amalekite. I don't know, whoever the shepherds were, right? This is not my... I don't have a horse in this race, right? Well, I have... Why should I get involved? And, you know, I could picture him, you know, saying to himself, you know, Moshe, stay out of their business. It's because you can't stay out of people's business that you're in this trouble to begin with. Right? But he says, no, I can't stay out of their business. There's a wrong being perpetrated here. Right? So that's why God appears to him at the burning bush, because he gets involved. And you see how he grows, because in the first story, he says nothing. And the second story, right, he says nothing, but he acts. Right? The second story, he doesn't act, but he says something. Right? He just tries to stop two people from fighting. Mm-hmm. Third story, he gets involved. Now, he doesn't have any dialogue with them, right? But when their father comes back and says, how did you get home so soon? Apparently, Moshe's help got them home sooner than they usually get home, right? And they left him there. They didn't even take him home. At least when Yaakov helped Rachel at the well, she brought him home. All right, they were related, fine. But when it comes to Lama Zer Zavten Es Ha'ish, say Lama Zer Zavten Oso, right? Ish Mitzri Hitzilanu Mi Ha'Ro'im, an Egyptian man helped us from the Ro'im. Can you picture, you think they asked him, who are you?
Well, he ran away wearing Egyptian clothing.
Ms. Dama, did they actually ask him? And if they did, might it have just been wise of him to say I'm an Egyptian rather than to say I'm a runaway Hebrew?
Yeah.
Because a runaway Hebrew means...
You were a slave.
There could be, who knows, there could be a posse here after me. Mm-hmm. With a big, big price on my head, and I can get people here in trouble, right? So once I can give you an excuse why Moshe might say he's an Egyptian, I don't know if it's proper for him to be punished for not saying he's a Hebrew. But this is Moshe, and believe it or not, there is a Medrash. It appears in Medrash Petiras Moshe. But this, I think, is quoted in other more mainstream places, which is Yosef got to be buried in Israel. Moshe took care of that.
Yes.
Last week's parasha.
Yes.
Moshe didn't get to be buried in Israel. Why? Because when Yosef identified himself, he said,
He's an Ivri.
When Moshe identifies himself, no, he doesn't.
He doesn't say anything. They're right. Identifying him.
So apparently there's something wrong with even anybody identifying you.
You don't say nothing.
Right? I don't know. It's a very tough measure.
It seems to me like he killed.
Yeah, I agree.
He got in a scrape, he had to run away, and he ran away with the clothing he was wearing, which is Egyptian.
I don't know if it's fair to judge him like this, but this Medrash does. Okay. All right, So that's this. Moshe is finds himself for this third act of heroism, with a wife, some peace for the first time in his life, and with his wife Tzipora, they have a child. That child he calls Gershom, and the reason for naming the child such is, take a look at page 300, the very top line. It says, Kiyomar ger hoyisi be'eretz nochria. So concentrate on that word, ger hoyisi. He doesn't say ger anochi. The eretz nochria is Egypt.
Yeah.
Implying that in Midian, I don't feel like a nochria. I don't feel that's an eretz nochria. Right? You agree?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It says, ger hoyisi be'eretz nochria. That reason is going to be repeated, remember, in Parshas Yisro, in this week's Parsha.
Is that going back to Mitzrayim?
I think so.
Are you suggesting that the Eretz there is referring to Mitzrayim and not
Yes. Oh. Gershom. Otherwise, why call him Gershom?
Uh-huh.
Ger is... Ger ho-yisi.
A stranger there.
Yeah. Now, what Igor said before is also very, very sweet, is that by Igor Shum, you know, plus Moshe was Gorash. So it's a pun on the word Ger and Gorash together. Right, it's an interesting concept. All right. Here in the beginning of Parshas Yisro, it's Veshnei Bnei Asher, Shema Achad Gershom, Ki Omar Ger Oisi Beretz Nachriya, Shema Achad Eliezer, Ki Elohei Avi Be'ezir, Vetzin Mechir Paro. All right, so... Does it seem that this child is born like soon after these events? Like this isn't many years later.
Yeah, it seems like everything happens quickly.
From now till
the
snare.
Well, you see, that's why the two opinions in the Medrash, that one that he's 20 and one that he's 40, right? He's 80 when he arrives in Egypt. Yeah. Now, if you assume that he arrives in Egypt shortly after the Sneh, and he didn't spend another 20 years in Midian.
No, after the Sneh, he came back. He had to rush.
I think so. Although I have heard some Perushim that say there's some time there too. But he has a child on his way to Egypt, right?
Right. Yeah. And so there was such a big difference between Gershon.
Is that,
and
that could it be? Unless many years pass between the marriage to Tzipporah and the birth of this boy, right? Anyway, Moshe only has two boys. That's why there's an opinion in the Mishnah that says that to fulfill Puravu,
two boys can
fulfill it as well as a boy and a girl. Because if you want to say it's a boy and a girl, like Beis Hillel say. Then Moshe didn't fulfill one of the mitzvahs. He didn't. Okay. Anyway, so Moshe is finding some peace of mind here, right? And look, when you're in this business, there's no peace. You want be'eshev b'kesh Yaakov le'shev b'shalva. You know, talk for all of rogues of Shal Yosef. You know, you want peace in this world too? It's enough, and the next world is enough for you. You know, right? So, you know, Bikesh Moshe Leshev B'Shalva B'Minya and talk for all of rogues of Shal. Come on, your people are suffering in Egypt. Where did you escape from? Right? Okay. So that's why God appears to him in the bush, and there's no midrashim, there's no indication any medrash that Moshe was reunited with his parents afterwards. I don't see anything.
Oh.
He's reunited with his brother afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Are they still alive?
Right? Mm-hmm. I doubt it. Right?
If it's 80 years, then he
was pretty old when he was born, apparently. So, he is about to be reunited with his brother, and I'll conclude with this. I remind you that this year is about parents and children, so I don't want to give you too far off. Is as follows, and also on siblings. Last year was couples, so this year it's the inner family, the nuclear family as you're growing up. Is that the relationship between Moshe and Aaron? Is such that we have the necessary atonement for how bad things were between brothers and Bereishis. Now we're sort of fixing that here in Shmos. So, one gets the sense at the burning bush that with Moshe's five objections, five different brush-offs of God, until the last one he just says, God, Shlach Nabiyat Tishlach, just send someone else. And God gets angry with him for that. He goes, Moshe, you made a lot of other excuses, and I answered those excuses. Now you're telling me those are just excuses? Right? In other words, you invite someone to do something and say, I can't go, I have a flat tire. Oh, don't worry about that, I'll come pick you up. And then you make another excuse? So what's the flat tire? Right? Right? There's a pasuk in Mishlei that says, the lazy man says there's a lion outside.
Yes.
Amar otzel ari bachutz. It's a pasuk in Mishlei.
That's right.
So the question is there really a lion outside or not? Because if he's fabricating that, he's worse than lazy. He's a rasha. He's wicked, right? He's lying, right? So, and if there is a lion outside, why are we calling him lazy? He's got an excuse, right? So the answer is that, well, if you had tickets to the World Series or the Super Bowl or Billy Joel concert or something else like that you really want to go to, you'll make your way down the roof and you in the back yard, you'll make your way.
You'll get around
the lion. Yeah, the lion's just an excuse. So when Moshe makes all these excuses, but here's the point I'd like to conclude with, is that what comes through the story that we'll do next week is that Moshe's concern is not so much about his own inadequacy, which he does share, he's a humble man, it's that he does not want to, I'll use the Yiddish word, fashter, or he doesn't want to undercut his brother. It seems that there's something in what Moshe is doing, and this is a tall order to prove. But I think that the reason for it is when Moshe says, Shlach Nabi Tishlach, God, send the one you usually send, which is my brother. I know about that. Send my brother. And so, because if Moshe didn't mean that, why does God in the very next pasuk start talking about Aaron? Mm-hmm. And how happy he is for you? Well, doesn't that have to do with anything? The answer is because Moshe's fear was that I'm just going to do what everybody else in our history has been doing. Younger brothers undercutting the older brother. And I don't want to do that again. Everyone else has been doing that. What are you putting me in the middle of this, God? Give it to Aaron. I'll be his assistant. So Hashem says, I know everybody's power, Moshe. You're the only one who can do this. All right? So that I'll close with these two questions, Shana and Igor, and then we have to go to Dabar Maariv. Yes?
Okay, but Aaron is actually the one who speaks to Pharaoh.
Yes.
He's the one that actually literally does the talking.
Yes, we'll look at that also. That's one of Moshe's complaints. He's kvad peh, kvad lashon, and we'll see what that is. Does it mean he stutters? Does it mean that he feels uncomfortable? We'll see what Moshe's inadequacy was in that. Yes.
Well, when is Moshe that Moshe is doesn't forfeit because he doesn't suffer as much as other people who suffered?
Yeah. Well, who is this Johnny come lately that should come in? I feel bad about that. Yeah. Right. It's like an eye in horror. Right. Okay. Time for Maariv.
Everyone's
ready. Do you ever listen to them?